tape number two, review of communications, the Earhart case. We're reviewing the tapes of Leo Bellartz when we finished tape number two. This is tape number three, side one, and we're on Leo Bellartz tape number three, side B. This is the last of the Bellart tapes, and we'll pick up right where we left off last time.
The next thing you got from her...
Well, look. Look, between 8:05 and 8:45, look at the times we just...
Yes.
We were just begging that gal to come on, say something. Do you hear us? Don't you hear us? What? You know.
Okay, then the next time you heard from her is almost an hour later at 8:43.
That's right.
And it says, Earhart to Itasca, we are on the line 157337. We'll repeat message. We will repeat north and south.
Yeah.
Well, they threw that north and south in there later, didn't we?
No. She actually said we are running north and south.
Oh, I got it in the wrong place. Okay, we are on the line 157337.
Yeah.
We'll repeat message. We'll repeat this on 6210 kilocycles. Wait.
Yeah.
3105 on voice with a signal strength 5. She came back. Earhart transmission. We are running on north and south line.
That's right.
Listen, that's right. 6210.
No, listening 6210.
Then this is, he's listening on 6210.
We was listening on everything, let's put it that way.
And then he said, Earhart from Itasca heard you okay on 3105, 7500. He said that heard you okay on 3105 kilocycle.
You see what she said, we will repeat on 6210. She originally broadcast this on 3105, see?
I see.
She said she was going to... She didn't know that we was receiving her on 3105. She said she would repeat it on 6210. We never heard her on 6210, and that is what I say. At that particular time, that is when she went in the drink. You can say 0845. Bingo. And that was it.
What does this mean down here? At 09:34. Howland from Itasca.
Wait,
her
09:34?
Yeah. It's down the page a little ways.
All right, go ahead.
Howland from Itasca per O'Hare.
That's that's the end of the Bellart tapes, and that was the end of the interview with Bellartz. Let me think about this for a minute, and I'll make a few comments. Well, to recap in general, it seems that Bellartz, for some reason or other, kept insisting that they transmitted on 7500 and 3105 with voice, both of them, and always used ICW, stated a couple times. However, I think the logs show differently. I think the logs show when they did use A2 or ICW, and otherwise they were using A1 or straight continuous wave unmodulated signal. On the T16 transmitter, which is what 7500 was set up on, that was a sure thing, as far as all the information I've been able to receive, including the manuals on the T16. It was strictly a CW transmitter. And I stated before, the T10, which was used, T10A, which was used for 3105, could only transmit up to a little over 4,000 kilohertz or kilocycles, and it was the only thing they had that they could transmit voice on. So I can't quite understand why Leo and kept insisting that they did have voice capabilities on the other frequencies, except that As we'll see later when we interview with Sutter, I'm very much of the opinion that Sutter was of the opinion that they could too. And of course, the excerpts of the radio that Commander Thompson turned in when they were on the return of the cruise insinuates that they were transmitting both on voice and CW on 7500 as well as on 3105. I wonder if Leo didn't tell Ensign Sutter and Commander Thompson, etc., that was the case at the time, and they never really knew the difference. The officers didn't really know the difference. I just don't quite understand it. Another thing is, Leo was a little different, quite a bit different than Galton in his description of Amelia's voice. Leo was of the opinion that she was practically on the verge of hysteria at the last transmission. Quite graphic about it, actually. Galton thought that, yes, she was concerned, but that she was really quite cool and quite collected and not verging on hysteria. I think much later on, when we get into Commander Thompson's letter to Admiral Wishy, where he describes the tone of her voice and whatnot, I think we'll have a little clearer picture of exactly what that was all about. I thought it was interesting that Leo, when he made the drawing, of which I have on the back of a manila folder, that the T-10 and T-16 and T-14 transmitters are located behind the radio operators. And the T-16 and the T-10 shared the same antenna, and the antenna had to be switched back and forth whenever it was shifted. Leo remarks about the direction finder. It could be absolutely the way he said it. However, I can't explain why Cipriani was able to get a bearing a night or two later when he took a bearing at random almost on a frequency a little below 3105, and also he took a bearing on the Itasca at one time, I believe, when he was ordered to get results, at least take a bearing on the ship. I don't know. His logs, well, we'll have to wait till we get the Cipriani's on that. Okay, well, that's about all with Leo. The only thing to sum up is that Leo's memory is quite graphic, and he seems to have a tendency to be quite dramatic about the various events and dramatize them some. I cannot understand his insistence that they were transmitting both on 3105 and 7500 with voice. Either faulty memory or some reason not to want to admit that. You noticed during the tapes there at one time, he said that there was some mistakes made, but he didn't want to say what it was. I checked with his son later, and after he died, and he didn't leave any further tapes or anything, at least none that we'd found. Okay, now we'll go to O'Hare, Thomas O'Hare's tapes, and we'll run them through. Okay, these are Thomas O'Hare's tapes. I have five tapes all together, and the tapes were done at three different interviews. The first interview was one tape, and this tape was done on May 13th, 1975. So this will be the first tape, and I'll do the tapes chronologically. This tape has a lot of background noise because it was done in a public place, and we were not using a select microphone. We were just using the condenser microphone on my recorder. So there'll be a lot of background noise when you hear anything that's off the tape.
So we get over there and we find out we have to serve as a medium. really make the necessary arrangements. I'm getting the Cypriot interested.
Sure. I'm interested in it all, Tom.
Well, there's a shot there, too. So we had the Army Air, whatever they call it, in the day. Two of those people came aboard because they could fly. And that's when we picked up Cipriani. I think he was off the team, if you remember the team. So the Navy gave us a breadboard for 3105, because there wasn't any. That was high frequency in those days. So all we go. So Ballard sent Cipriani to the beach with the breadboard. He didn't know how to operate that summer kitchen any more than I did, or you would. But he was the type of a kid that was, he wouldn't ask, you know, Brady. I'd ask in a minute, and I'd say, well, Arch, for Christ's sake, how do you run this gadget? You know, disgrace, you know, a piece of equipment. This is a battery operated. I mean, the big 6-volt webstone, you know. Cipriani is over on the island with the Chinese boys or whatever they were. He couldn't get a cut on her. He didn't know how to operate. So his excuse was the battery was dead. That's a lie. So he couldn't get a cut. If he could have got a cut on it, you know, just a line, we'd have known in which direction to go. Well, that's the failure of the whole case. When an emergency comes up, you throw all outside the board. You just go ahead and do what you have to do. But just between you and me, Cipriani was no help. And you might be wondering why I was only a third-class leader.
No, those days,
yes, but I've formerly been a bosun's mate.
Oh, you switched your rate from both?
Did like hell. I got busted. Because in 33, they repealed prohibition and it knocked the ass out of the Coast Guard. I got busted. Because in 33, they repealed prohibition and it knocked the ass out of the Coast Guard. So they threw us out.
I went out. You were out of the service for a little while, aren't you?
Yeah, 30 days.
That would be 33.
So bosun's mates were hit the hardest because we had all that patrol crap. They put all our destroyers out of commission. So here I find myself a seaman again.
How old were you when you went in then? 17?
18.
So you were born 1911?
Mm-hmm. April the 6th.
April the 6th, 1911. Chicago. Were you from a large family? Or?
Yeah.
Eight?
5 and 3. 5 boys, 3 girls.
5 boys, 3 girls. Where were you? You know what?
Right 11, in the middle.
Right in the middle.
You know where I had to wear your clothes. You know, and you know that beat?
Right, I was the youngest of 3 boys. I got all the hand-me-downs.
I got the hand-me-downs. And my father was an electrical contractor. So I was a boozer.
What was your father's name?
Barney.
Barney?
Barney O'Hare.
Barney O'Hare. What did he do?
He's an electrical contractor.
Electrical contractor.
a pretty good business, you know, around the turn of the century.
Yes, because all we did was old house wiring.
Yeah, so that's...
Everybody was changing, you know.
People were putting in lights in those days.
Yeah, which was easy.
What was your mother's name?
Rose.
Rose?
Rose O'Hanlon.
O'Hanlon.
Hanlon.
Hanlon?
O'Hanlon. I guess O'Hanlon. They dropped the O somewhere.
What, were they both born in the United States, or were they immigrants?
No,
they were both in the Oakland.
County Armand.
County Armand. So you were very steeply instilled then with your early Irish traditions.
I was never in a public school in my life.
Always in parochial school.
In the same damn one.
Well, what high school, do you remember what parochial high school you graduated from?
Sure, St. Mel's.
I'm sorry, St.
Mel's.
Mel's.
Had a very famous coach that you ought to know, Paddy Driscoll. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, it does. I can't put it together, though.
Well, he was a very famous Bears football star, and he was the coach for our school. In Chicago, he was famous, like Lefty O'Doul is in San Francisco.
You remember you were having trouble with the T-60?
Where did you pick up that little piece of information? I didn't mention
it. No, I've been digging
Where
on
did
it
you
for about 5
that?
Years. I got it out of your logs. I have your logs. I have transcripts
Where
of
Where did
them.
You pick up this little hunk of information?
Well, it's
hot. Why couldn't she hear me on 3105?
Oh, I don't know. Yes.
I don't care how stupid she was. And I'm putting out a hell of a lot more than she is. Why couldn't she hear me?
Must be a reason. Must be a reason.
All right, here I am sitting here. See that last lamp down there?
Yep.
That's where the transmitter is. I flip the button and it goes into action. But I can't read the meters, can I, from here?
No.
What if the son of a bitch is modulating?
What if all you're doing is putting out a carrier? Just a steady carrier. No modulation on it.
3 times we had to ask Leo, why doesn't that son of a bitch modulate? And we would go over and make an adjustment. This is before the case,
yeah.
And during the case. I often wondered, was there something wrong with the transmitter? Or was it all her fault?
Well, she heard you on 7500.
Why couldn't she hear me on 3105?
Well, if she could hear you on 7500 and she couldn't hear you on 3105, doesn't sound like her receiver.
She must have had 2 receivers.
No, she only had 1.
What was she using for the beacon?
Nothing.
Well, she told me plainly, you read the logs, that I hear you on 75.
Yeah?
I do not hear you on 3105. I'm shooting, I'm giving her the weather blind.
That's right. And she's using the same receiver for both of them. She only has 1 receiver, a Western Electric 28. It's an all-wave receiver. I have pictures of it if you'd like to see it.
Now, that's wrong information. I later found out after talking to him that it was a Bendix RA1 receiver she had. But anyway, we'll just let that go for the moment.
She only has 1 receiver, a Western Electric 28. It's an all-wave receiver. I have pictures of it if you'd like to see it.
Now to go to 6210, all she had to do was go click, huh? Was it
yes.
A crystal jam?
Yes. On transmit,
no,
not on receiver.
No,
on transmit only, it's crystal.
Wait a minute. She had a DF. If you recall, yes.
The DF did not have a separate receiver. He used her other receiver. She only had 1
receiver. You remember
receiver.
Her saying, I can't get a cut on you?
Right.
I can't get a null?
Right.
You remember that particular
yes.
little phrase? Now, Gerner makes a big issue
out of a little thing. I'm running low on gas. Now, here's a phrase I want you to pick up. Or I only have a half hour's gas. Now, he makes a big issue out of it.
Doesn't make much difference. It adds up to about the same
thing. Oh, well, no, he's got the CIA, the Japanese Imperial Fleet, the German High Command. He's got everybody in there, you know. Of course, he's made a career out of it. I talked to some woman, too, that wrote it. What was her name?
Ann Pellegrini, probably.
Why the hell did you come up with these goddamn names? That's exactly who it was.
I've been in this for about 5 years. I know
what Ann got hold of me. I don't know how the hell they got get hold of like you. I don't know how the hell you ever got hold of me.
Through the Coast Guard. You know, you ought to spend a couple days with me. You know who I'm going to see later on this week? Remember Stockstill?
Just to hit the highlights of that again. This was a couple years before our last tape was made, and as you can see, O'Hare was really surprised that I knew, suspected that something was wrong with their transmitter. I had mentioned the T-16 because they had been having Anthony had worked on the T-16. They were reported having trouble, but he meant the T-10. And as you heard there, he said that they had had trouble with the modulation on it, and that they thought they were having trouble when Earhart was coming in, modulation on it. He was a little unspecific about just exactly what troubles they were having. However, later tapes, you'll see that even 2 years later, he repeats the story, but being much more explicit about what the problem was and when they got it fixed. Some of his memories were pretty good, and some were incorrect, but only in detail. It seemed to me like he was telling it at least the best way he remembered it, and whatever tricks his mind had played on him through the years might have affected him some, but he didn't seem to be particularly making things up particularly, except to enlarge his part in the thing and make himself possibly a little more of prime importance than the case might have been. Okay, I'll continue running the tape now and listening to it. We'll see what if we pick anything else up off this.
Let me tell you, cute. We're out there on this Earhart business, and we should have hit the fan yet. So Kennington in the shack, he was, what, 2.5 then, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was Lieutenant Commander.
Out of Honolulu. See, he wasn't in the ship's company.
No. He used to be commander, I think.
No, this is in 37, now.
Yeah.
So Frank comes in the shack, and he says, hi, O'Hare. I says, hi. For some reason, our officers are a little more friendly with radio personnel, as they are with yeomen and pharmacist mates. Oh, he says, we've been out now, what, 15 days or something? Oh, he says, I wonder if I could get in touch with my old wife. I said, well, I got to go to Honolulu, where he lived. He said, so? I said, well, do you happen to know who the communication officer is in the Honolulu office? He says, yes. I said, who? He says, me.
I said,
you're in. You're in.
Well, that's the end of that tape. That was the one that was done, and let me pull it out here and check it. That was the one that was done May 13th, 1975. He repeated that story on later tapes again, and the interesting thing, one time I believe it was he that said it, possibly it was Galton, but They really liked Kenner, and they had assigned a personal operator assigned to him, and I believe it was ER. I haven't run into it on the tapes yet. I would like to tie that down because ER is mentioned in the logs one time. I believe it is Kenner, but I haven't tied it down yet. Okay, that was the end of that tape, and the next time I was in Fort Lauderdale was on May 20th, 1976. I met with Thomas J. O'Hara again, and I made three tapes. And this is tape one of the three tapes that were made on that day, and this is tape one, side one. And we'll just go ahead and get the introduction here on this tape so we can identify it later. Thomas J. O'Hare, radio operator on the Itasca in 1937 when she was at Howland Island. We are in Mr. O'Hare's living room at 110 East River Drive in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It's about 11:45 in the morning of Thursday, May 20th, 1976, and we're looking at Captain Thompson's report of a communication study on the Amelia Earhart case. Put in a recourse for Honolulu Division for some more Coast Guard radio men. And they gave, I guess, Cipriani.
From Latini.
And he was a second-class radio man.
Couldn't find his ass with both hands.
But he actually, did he actually ever work the ship at all?
No.
He was put ashore only then.
Oh, you mean, had he actually stood a watch?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, perhaps, yeah.
On the way down.
Yeah, but we put him ashore the night previous to her takeoff to man the direction finder, which the Navy had lent us, a breadboard 3105 frequency coverage. A breadboard, you're aware of what a breadboard is?
Yeah.
Jury rig, DF. Cipriani was to get cuts on her.
Did you ever see the thing?
Oh, yes. Oh, you mean visually?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure, but I wouldn't know how to operate it.
Was it a receiver built into it?
Well, of course, they've got to have a receiver to get the signal. But, I mean, I wouldn't, unless you instructed me in the use of it, I wouldn't know. It's a strange piece of gear. Just like I can drive a car, but if you put out a new car, I have to ask you where the horn is, the lights, and check out.
Well, did they use the ship's gun batteries to power the thing?
Correct.
What do they mean by the ship's gun batteries?
Well, rather than any other batteries. In other words, I had a whole bank of emergency batteries to supply the radio room in case of failure because we didn't have any Kohler plant. We didn't use any of those. Those are high-capacity batteries. So instead of breaking that up, they took them off the gun. So who the hell needs them on the gun out there?
What the guns use the batteries for?
Oh, well, for whatever. I don't know at this offhand.
Were they, you know what voltage they were, or what voltage?
Well, they had to be 6-volt batteries.
They had to be 6-volt.
Sure, but large capacity.
They were pretty hefty.
Oh, hefty, because the voltage, the size of the battery governs the capacity of the battery, the number of plates, of course.
And so you figure that it was...
They were fully charged and put on the beats. The theory that the batteries ran down is false. They couldn't possibly have been run down.
You don't think that the current drain...
Oh, heavens, good Christ, no. They'd run for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Seven.
Itasca transmitter apparently faulty. Direct radio electrician investigate and make necessary adjustments prior to sailing Itasca. Point. They don't say which transmitter. Had to be the T10. Not out of Honolulu yet.
Page 8.
tell us this. NMC reports refusal of radio man on the Itasca to make adjustments to transmitters and to shift frequency when directed, and refusal to forward traffic. That's ridiculous. I don't understand that, because we're communicating on 12600, are we not? That transmitter was fine. Nothing wrong with that transmitter that I know of.
That was Thompson. He got a captain's mast over that.
Not during the flight.
Before the flight, he got a captain's mast, and his excuse was accepted. And no punishment was...
Based on repeated checks, period, I did. Thompson was a ham radio man.
I didn't know that.
With a radio call sign. And it was his custom on the late watches to wind up the transmitter on the amateur bands and communicate using his call sign. That was his custom, which was not known throughout the vessel. But I know he was using the transmitter, because I would put a toothpick on one of the gadgets, you know. When I'd come up, that toothpick would be gone, which meant that he had gone over and shifted frequencies to the ham band. Thompson, sure. He was a ham. Thompson, sure. He was a ham. I'm a T-16.
What do you, they're talking about, do you think it's a T-16 that was having the transmitting trouble?
Mm-mm. Only trouble that I could think would be with the T-10. Now, if NMC had sent me a signal to adjust the transmitter, I'd have got up off my fanny and adjusted it. If they told me to shift frequency, I'd have shifted frequency. Why not?
You're on page 9 now. You're on page 9 now.
Now, that's kind of interesting, because that's sent from San Francisco Division, and it's more or less addressed to Black. And where the message came from Ruth Hampton from the Department of Interior, where the information came from. And I can show, I have Putnam's telegram to Miss Hampton, Mrs. Hampton, and he did not say that. He said she has 500 kcs, but of dubious usability. And somehow that got transposed to close in. I haven't traced that out yet. But Putnam's word was dubious usability in his telegram to her.
My information was that she had jettisoned her 500 kilocycle transmitter.
But you got that from Don Dwiggins.
But I got that from an outside source.
Yeah. Much after.
However, then there's some question about her trailing antenna for 500. There was some question about that. However, not even a dip was heard from her on 500. And how was she going to communicate on 500 kilocycles when she didn't know the Morse code? 500. And how was she going to communicate on 500 kilocycles when she didn't know the Morse code? She couldn't send and receive a dot. Because I asked her 10,000 times at 8 words a minute, which is about as slow as anyone can possibly send. You can't send any slower. Position, your position, position, position. Because she could hear me on 7,500. She had already informed me that she could hear my beacon. So I spelled out position, your position, never got an answer. She didn't know what the hell I was saying.
Of course, you were setting CW.
CW?
Page 11. Page 12. Page 13. Page 14.
But that's all extraneous matter there.
But is that common for every little thing that goes on between radio operators for somebody?
NMC, Southside, is the voice of the division commander. Anything coming from there is the same as coming from the commander. Regardless,
they are monitoring all the time everything that's going on.
Well, all stations were. That's Coast Guard procedure.
Where was Southside located?
Right in back of Fly Shack, the zoo, at Fort Funston.
Is that where the operators were located?
Mm-hmm. I spent many years there. After.
See, we're on page 15 now. Page 16. Page 16.
E16 is faulty and does not key properly when sending at slow speed.
This is from San Francisco Division.
Mm-hmm. What has that got to do with it? That was just ship's business. Now, was the 14 we were sending on 75, was that the one we were... 16? But she could hear us on that one. Okay. In quick exhaust valves.
You know what Anthony says about that, don't you?
What? Did you see me laugh? Quick exhaust.
Who sent that? Sutter?
No, Sutter doesn't know anybody.
No,
the Itasca.
Somebody, the Itasca sent that just to shut him up.
Yeah, well, Leo said to Sutter, I just fixed the eye. And Sutter said to him, what did you fix? And Leo, the Gumaquadja, the exhaust. The Fornerstat. I don't know how many lies I've told communication officers because I didn't want to be bothered.
And Sutter wouldn't understand if you did.
No! And the same with all communication officers. Why explain what you fix when they haven't the slightest idea what you're talking about? So you say the Fornerstat on a chronoson.
So they sent that out.
And, yeah.
That satisfied division because the guy at the other end didn't know what he was talking about either.
Well, this was just a communication frequency anyhow for ship's business. Well, I'm finally at Holland Island.
Now, of course, this is all, the whole first third of the report is before the flight.
This has nothing, there has been nothing pertinent here at all. Faulty transmitters have no bearing on this whole subject.
Okay, you're page 16. You're page 16 now.
I had no trouble getting off messages.
As far as the T-16 was concerned.
As far as anything was concerned.
How about the T-10? I hate to interject that, but...
The T-10, no comment on that.
Right, we'll hold off on that until we get to it. You're on page 18 now? Yep.
Well, I fail to see what we're trying to hide. All it's into about transmitters being faulty. I had no trouble communicating with the NMC. I was banging it out just as if I was sitting alongside the San Francisco Pier.
Wow. In fact, you were heard throughout the Pacific.
On CW.
Right.
Sure.
See, but this is the point they're trying to make. Okay, now we're on page, we've gone over 19, we're on page 20.
About receiving and transmitting, there was no problem at any time, to my knowledge, that there was any difficulty in transmitting and receiving on the high frequencies.
So why they interject all this business about this, that, and the other thing is...
On the point-to-point circuits.
Yeah, there was no problem there. KFS was honest, NMC was honest, NPU was honest, Honolulu was honest. Every one dip, boy, and they were right honest.
You're on page 21 now.
Earhart calling Itasca. We received your signals, but unable to get minimum. Please take bearing on us and answer on 3105. We received your signals. By that, she means 7,500. But unable to get minimum. That's her homing device.
Her receiver received your signals on 7,500,
but unable to. She's but
unable to take a minimum.
In other words, a bearing.
Right.
Because she couldn't get
it was
a minimum.
An oral direction finder. She had to get a minimum. You know, she's.
But this was CW.
Right.
I cannot talk to her on that.
That's right.
Because
the G16,
it was not equipped. Yet. For a voice. The high frequency. The high frequency direction finder couldn't get her when she whistled in. That's Cipriani.
Why couldn't he get her?
That's debatable. That's her last words. Last words at 8:45. Now, she did hear us on 7,500. I show you that, huh?
Yeah. No doubt about it.
But I couldn't talk to her on that frequency.
No, and she couldn't receive your code.
And she couldn't receive my code when I kept asking her for position.
She heard your signals. She didn't understand your signals. She just heard them.
And, well, all she was interested in getting a cut on us so she could home in on us. But she couldn't get a minimum, so the signal was useless to her.
Okay, we're looking back at page 21 again.
Yeah, we can skip all the Ontario and Swine.
22. Page 22.
Yep. Yep, this is the first train. Previous to the interest. Oh. Had she only been able to communicate on 500, we could have got a cut on her. On the 500 kilocycle DF.
But it was dubious usability.
No, our DF on 500 was fine.
Her transmitter.
But she couldn't transmit on 500.
Page 23. Page 23.
Make these on 3105. This was done. But I see no report on how we, you know, these are a test signal. But there's nothing underneath here to say how they received us. This was done in connection with calibrating the TAIR 10 transmitter for 3105 kilocycles. Well, did they receive us or not? Make these. That's. Then you're supposed to come back and say, I receive you, blah, 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 S5 or whatever. Nothing.
They're intimating, though, that you're received, all right.
On CW, it was the modulator that was haywire, which only has to do with the voice.
CW?
Boom, CW, boom, 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 fine, S5.
Boom, put her over on voice.
I don't hear you at all.
I'm not modulating. How the hell can you hear me if I'm not putting out?
Page 24 now. Page 26. Page 27. Page 28. Page 29. Page 30. Page 31.
Now that's the end of tape 3, side 1, review of communications. Switching the tape over to the other side.